brave, boldly go where no one has gone before. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
It's Webcomics Weekly.
The Brad Geiger Hour.
America.
America. With us this evening, our panel of cartoonists, Brad Geiger from the sunny Philadelphia
region.
It works for me. It'll work for you.
Evil-comic.com. Preliminary work orders are in. TV's back. What? It's Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com.
We're all doing what we can.
Boys only, says Chris Straub, StarSlipCrisis.com. Oh, excuse me, StarSlip.com.
Smoky and sophisticated.
And I am also here, Scott Kurtz, PvPOnline.com, loving baby. All right, Webcomics Weekly. So, are we gonna invite our special guest now live?
Sure. Let's see if the magic of Skype can hold up.
All right, let's do it.
Let's try.
Who could it be?
Who's our mystery guest for the week?
Hey, it's me, Steve.
It is.
Steve Hamaker, everybody.
Hey.
Yay! Let me close Warcraft. Hold on. Yay!
I love that very Sesame Street entrance, too. That was great. Well, it's me, Steve.
Hey, it's me, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for just attacking me like that. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was the plan. Well, Steve Hamaker, you may know him as behind the fantastic indie book Fish and Chips. He also works on a little thing called Bone.
That's it. That's my meal ticket.
That's your meal ticket. That's right.
That's it.
And he's with us tonight to talk about coloring.
Yay. I like coloring.
Good. I'm glad because I can't do it.
Me neither.
And I'm glad to be here with you guys and your black and white comics. I'm here to color.
Way to work that in, Steve.
I've got a question that I always wanted to ask somebody like Steve.
Sure.
And that is, do you when you're describing what you do, do you say that you color comics or do you say that you colorize comics and why?
I guess I say I color comics.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Sure.
Brad, has anyone used the phrase colorize since 1942?
Yeah.
I tell you what, Margaret, we're going to make this film whiz bang great. We're going to colorize.
Follow up question for you, Steve. When you are coloring and you feel pressure on your bladder, do you pee or do you make water?
All right, come on. Settle down, guys. Okay, listen, Steve. So when you're turnerizing the comic, what is the process?
So, Steve, let's bring it to a serious note here. Back to a serious note. So when you're trying to spectralize your comics for full color scope,
I use crystals.
No, there's a reason I asked that, and I'm going to tell you what it is. Mm-hmm. And that is, sometimes I think people have a real hang-up about saying I color comics because it sounds juvenile. It sounds, I color in a color book, that sort of thing. And I hear every now and again people use the colorize word, even though it's more, as you guys have pointed out, a little bit more of a weird use of the language. And I was just curious. I've always wanted to ask a colorist this question.
Don't you mean a colorizer?
We'll start this over.
Choose your words.
Somebody else ask the first question.
Okay, listen. Let's back it up to Hi, I'm Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Steve. I color bone. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Well, thank you for joining us, Steve.
This is real a little surreal because I've been listening to your guys' podcast all day actually in preparation. So this feels a little weird.
I'm sorry.
Have you been listening all day?
So what's like that? A marathon of podcasts.
It is a marathon. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I've never been able to listen to more than one at a time.
Really? No, you guys are very easy to listen to. You guys are very informative. So can I tell you,
I haven't listened to a single one.
I believe that.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't listened to a while.
I can tell. I can tell your phone it in.
Let me
I always say the same things every week.
I actually have a serious question for Steve about coloring comics.
Sure.
How much now, when I talk to a lot of artists that pencil and ink and stuff, there's a lot of cheating going on. In other words, of course there's a formal way to learn this stuff. But 90% of the artists I know, they don't really use real perspective. They fake it. They cheat.
Right.
Are you a color theory nerd? Like, do you know? Like, here, I'm going to give you color. You tell me the complimentary quick. Orange.
Blue.
It's purple.
Everybody knows that one.
It's purple.
This guy is no fake.
Just based off that one question, you got the job, kid.
No, seriously, that's a good question, and it's kind of a little bit of both. I think I've gotten better at it, but when I started out, I was definitely faking it. I was just getting by. Yeah, definitely. So
how much of real color theory goes into it now?
I think there's definitely now it's a little more. It's really just what you see is either good or bad. It's either working or it's not working. It's not really about, like, you know, some sort of theorem that we can apply to it and say, well, this is why it's good or this is why it's not working or anything like that. It's more like me and Jeff sitting down and looking at the artwork and saying, is this working for this scene? Is this working for the characters, et cetera? So,
right. So do you ever find yourself intentionally breaking color theory and being fine with that?
I don't know. I guess technically some things probably wouldn't. Yeah, things don't necessarily always follow the rules. And just to give you a general example, when I was in art college, my worst class was color concept in freshman year. I never really got it. I never really understood. It always seemed like some sort of mystery field or a mystery idea in art in general. And I always thought, like, why is it so hard? Maybe it was because I was just, and this is not saying that I have it down, but I think it's come a little more naturally to me working digitally than maybe then when I wasn't, because I didn't, when I was in college, I did not use a computer for my art. And having a computer and being able to experiment and do things quickly, I think that actually helps me understand, like, oh, okay, now I get, you know, you can just kind of see what it looks like against blue, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Whereas, you know, if you're using watercolor, you're screwed. You know, you have to get it right, like, the first time or start over. So,
yeah.
So glad to hear somebody else was mystified by color theory. I was absolutely in the same boat. I just couldn't get my head around it.
Yeah. Well, that's how art college was for me.
Occurs to me, guys, if I can stop you for a second, Steve, occurs to me that we might have some younger listeners that don't know the basic idea of what color theory is. Do you want to take them through real quick what the basic idea behind color theory as a concept?
I don't even know if I can describe it. I mean, it's really just the rules that certain colors work well together. Certain colors play off other colors. For example, orange and blue are opposites on a color wheel. So if you have a circle, there are colors that, like, if you cut that circle into a pie chart, you could put the different colors in that pie chart, and they would be opposite from certain other colors. And those are supposed to complement. They call it complementary colors. And these are terms and these are things that I've never really understood until I've used them in practice. So it's a little, that's why I actually don't like talking about color concepts, because I don't really know how to speak that language as well.
Sure. That's fair enough. Well, I was just going to say
that, you know, I have a really hard time with math, and I've always wished that someone could present color theory differently, because it seems to me that what happens to me is all color theory is presented with a bunch of charts and wheels, and it looks like math. And I think that's why my brain can't wrap itself around it. All I've been able to do is fake it with some little tricks and stuff that we'll get into later. But
right.
Let me ask you.
Don't discount
this,
the
tricks.
Yeah. Go
ahead. I was gonna say, Steve, why don't we ask you from more emotional standpoint than a question for a colorist?
Sure.
What do you think? Because I'm sure we all have an opinion on this, but what does good color do for a comic?
I think it helps tell the story. In short, I definitely take pride in being able to enhance the story, the actual storytelling of bone when I'm coloring that and when I'm colorizing that. And it comes, you know, it comes in with, you know, Jeff and I work on, a lot of people that I've met over the years having worked on this book think that I do this like off-site, or they, maybe they don't necessarily think that me and Jeff work together, but Jeff and I actually work in the same building and in the same room at, you know, at length on these books. So we are doing this, a lot of it together, especially at the very end when I finish the book and we kind of go through page by page by page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're making all these decisions as we go. You know, is this panel working with this panel? Is, you know, is this scene working with this scene? And so it for me, yeah, it's definitely cool to be able to enhance a book and a story that already works on its own. So it just so happens that it takes color so well, which not all black and white art does necessarily. So
how difficult is that final process for you, Steve? I mean, when you're going through that book, how difficult is it for you? How many changes take place in that last step?
Sometimes none, sometimes hundreds. You know, it's sometimes it's just it's pretty straightforward scene, and Jeff's really happy with it. And it's never really, when we have to change things, it's never really that he's not happy with it. It's more like, you know, we know that we can push on things, certain ideas and certain colors. I mean, we do a lot of layering and, you know, layering upon layers of different, you know, haze, color hazes. I know you guys have talked about this before, which I hope we can get to some techniques and some pro tips later on. But, you know, there are a lot of techniques that Jeff and I have learned through this process that, you know, really, really help enhance mood and tone and things like that, which is a lot of fun. So it's kind of cool, but it's also kind of excruciating for me because I've already done so much work on a given page. So when we sit down and we actually, you know, go over it again, it's like, oh my gosh, how many times do I have to color this page? You know,
right. See, that's what I was wondering, because that's kind of how I would feel. It'd be like, oh my God, I've already put so many hours into this page, and now this guy comes out and maybe from your aspect at the very moment, it feels like he's coming out of left field.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, oh, exactly. My God. You know what? This blue one goes and it's just fine. Let's get on with it. You know?
So Steve,
say that to him often. So, yeah.
Steve, has that changed the way you color? Do you maintain 49 different layers now just in case he wants to change something?
Absolutely. That's actually how – I mean, I learned how to color, digitally speaking, from working with Jeff. Like, I started doing some covers for him, like, way back in 2000, I think, was the first time I did some covers for him. And it was all experimentation. It was all just because I was in the office. I was actually working on the action figures at the time. I wasn't even working on the comic book. And I just wanted to work in comic books. So I started just doing stuff on my own in Photoshop, trying to figure out how to do the layers, trying to figure out how to strip out the line art from the background and stuff like that. So, yeah, my process is the Jeff Smith process because I know that he's going to want to change that one little cricket in that one panel, but it's in the panel 48 times, and if I don't put that on its own layer, I'm going to regret it, you know? So I definitely learned the hard way.
Now, hey, you know what? Let me say this, Scott, and then it's yours for hours. While you're listening to Steve talk, by the way, you may want to go to YouTube and type in just three keywords, coloring, and then Steve, and then last name, H-A-M-A-K-E-R, and you can watch Steve coloring while we're talking.
Yes.
There's some absolutely fantastic samples there. And my gosh, you're fast.
Yeah.
Unless that's...
That's sped up video, yeah.
I know. I was kidding, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Is that where you're coloring the Shazam stuff?
I wish I was that fast. What's that?
Is that where you're coloring the Shazam stuff?
Yeah, I did a couple Shazam ones. I think I've got some Bone stuff up there. And I think I actually did a Fish and Chips one recently, too. So, because I've just started doing inking digitally, which, Scott, I know you've done that for a while. And I just started picking that up. And
How awesome is that? Is that not the best?
It's awesome. Well, I've got one of those Cintiqs.
Oh, to hell with you, Hammaker. Come on.
I know. But listen, those things they're amazing. They're not just – when I first got it, I felt guilty.
Listen, you have to do me a favor.
Go ahead.
As soon as this podcast is over,
yep.
You have to email my wife and explain to her why it's okay for me to spend the money on that.
All right. I mean, listen, anybody that's making a living doing digital art in any way needs to get one.
I'm begging you, Steve.
I will.
And then say, I got you a free Jeff Smith cover. That alone would be $3,000 normally, so buy your husband a Cintiq.
Exactly.
Now, is it worth it? Seriously, is it like drawing on digital paper?
It takes some getting used to. I'm not going to lie to you. It took me a while. Like, I'm just now – I've had it for about a year, and I'm – like, only in the last, like, 2 months have I started, like, actually inking and drawing. And now I just do everything in Photoshop. I just pencil – anytime I'm doing, like, comics of my own, I just do all the scripts, and I pencil – like on the computer. It's so fun. It's so fun. You can just you don't have to worry about screwing up. There's no paper. There's no, you know, residue of your old drawing underneath it. You can just, you know, clip out heads, make them bigger if they're too small. You can make hands in the different positions. It's just very, very organic for me now. So you have to get one.
The question I had before you interrupted me by breaking my heart. I've been a fan of Jeff's from the beginning. I discovered his book. I discovered Bone going through a comic book shop in West Des Moines, Iowa, when the third issue was out.
Yeah.
And any interview of his I could read, I just devoured it. And
yeah.
I remember becoming a kind of like a member of his black and white cult, because I remember him saying, "I don't want to do it in color. I love the way I designed these panels to work in black and white."
Yeah.
So now you come in after maybe that position has mellowed a bit. Now you're coloring stuff that was designed to be black and white. How does that affect you coloring it?
It makes my job vastly easier than if not. And to give you a very quick example, Shazam, for example, was very, very difficult compared to Bone, because he knew that that artwork was going to be colorized. So he drew it differently. He designed it differently. The panels, everything about that book, if you looked at his original pages of Shazam and you looked at it as original pages of Bone, you would see that it just was different. He just did it differently. And it's hard to explain. I guess it's mainly the blacks. He didn't rely on black to really define space and things like that.
Well, because he knew what you're saying is, I mean, not to bag on Jeff at all. I'll say it so you don't have to. But he knew he had someone else coming in to help him. Finish it up.
Directly to him, he would admit it. He would actually admit that.
Okay.
Because at that point, we knew that book was going to be more of a collaboration than Bone even is now. Which I consider Bone a collaboration, because you know we're working on it together. But but Shazam was definitely collaboration, because he was thinking of me as he was drawing it. He was, you know, thinking that I was going to put background here. I was going to be able to, you know, lasso out this character and duplicate him and put him down in this panel. I mean, all kinds of crazy, not even color stuff, like just digital manipulation of the pages before we even put any color into them, which was the same technique that he's used, you know, on Bone with Xerox technology, just being able to, you know, Xerox a background and paste it and then draw the characters in the same thing. He's used those techniques even on Bone. So it wasn't really a difference in his thinking. It was just a faster way for him to, you know, apply the same technique.
Yeah.
But yeah, Shazam was fun in that way, but it was also very grueling for me, because it was a lot more work. You had to
carry a lot more of it yourself.
Exactly, exactly. Which, again, you know, I would have
guessed that it would have been harder for you.
It was hard, but I'm
I thought I would have assumed it would have been harder to color the Bone stuff, because he had designed it in black and white. Yeah, but now I understand what you're saying.
Is it a matter of like looser, more dashed off lines, expecting that color will fill in the feeling of it? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it probably boils down to his use of black more than anything, because if you look at, you know, pages, like if you look at a scene of Bone, most of the panels will really rely on darks, big shadow shapes and things like that he'll just put in with black ink. And he's creating depth with black and white, whereas with Shazam, he could create that depth later. We could just do that digitally with color. So he just put it off. You know, he had the same plan for the panel or for each page. He just put it off until I got it. You know, whereas with Bone, he was working on it by himself 15 years ago. You know, so he had to do it. He had to do it that way. And he, to get back to your original point, Scott, the purist thing is, it kind of is still a big deal. There are a lot of people that don't like the color because of that, because they believe that it should just remain black and white, which I can kind of understand, because there are comics that I am a fan of that I don't want to see colorized either. So it's kind of a weird, you know, I've dealt with a lot of weird reaction that way. Mostly positive, but I've definitely come into contact with people that feel threatened by color.
Well, Chris is the guy to talk to about that, because I think Chris feels very strongly about how his strip is constructed for black and white.
Yeah, you're talking about having
please,
a big
attack me.
You bastard. There's a huge, I'll have a room, and then in hard black and white, I have a big swath of black at the top, implying a shadow on the ceiling. It's a small room. But when I colorize that, or colorate it, as you may, I don't know what to do with that black. It doesn't work anymore because that black is an abstraction of shadow. But when I bring color into it, it's like, well, why is that shadow so heavy up there? Something would peek through.
Right.
So I feel like that's why I don't want to change Starslip to be a color strip.
Right.
I feel like I can imply more without having to draw all of it out if I just use hard black and white.
Right.
Well, Chris, though, it being a vector strip, couldn't you quite easily make that triangle or whatever sort of parallelogram that it becomes a color tone on tone in that background?
Yeah, I mean, I could do that. But the question is, how much detail do you want to add? Like and that might be a completely different question from color, or maybe it is related to color, but like when they're standing in the hallway of the Fuseli, I draw one line up there on a diagonal and then like three arcs, and that implies a curved ceiling. But if I color that is not adequate to imply that ceiling anymore. You know, it doesn't work as a symbol for ceiling. I have to do more.
Hmm. Well, and this is one of those things, and maybe Steve can talk to this, because we sometimes get in trouble with some listeners when we say this, is that coloring is a significantly larger amount of work than a black and white strip.
It can be, yeah. It comes in with, you know, how you design it, I think. And you know, to Chris's point, I think he's designing it for black and white. I mean, mm-hmm. He could probably alter his design process and just do it in color, but I don't think he's, you know, what he wants to accomplish is being accomplished the way he's doing it. He's, you know, designing that panel specifically that way for a reason. It's not arbitrary. So just throwing color on top of that is arbitrary. And I think that's, I think Bone for some reason is just, I don't know. I mean, I've definitely run into certain pages and panels where it's been harder to convert it to color. And I've had to think about, well, do I want to colorize the black, which I don't normally ever do. I actually don't, I don't think I've ever really done that to, you know, to the level of like changing a big, huge shadow behind somebody into like a color. So I don't know. I mean, besides doing that, I don't know how you would get around doing that without just starting from color, you know, designing it originally with color in mind. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, I think is going to take color better because he usually, you know, things are a lot more open. The shapes are open. I think you could just, you could colorize that a lot easier. But again, you're still, Scott is doing the same thing, just in a different style, but he's designing that for black and white.
And
so I don't know.
I did hear the word colorize.
Yes. No, colorize is a valid word. I just wouldn't call myself a colorizer.
Here's my question to you, Mr. Hammaker, and that is this. Of which work are you most proud or more proud? Your work on your coloring work on Bone or your work on Shazam?
Bone for sure. Bone definitely. Because I mean, that's huge, man.
That's just, and huge.
and your work in both cases has been beautiful. We got to get that out of the way. But that's despite the fact that you have tackled these issues that Chris has been talking about with these filled-in blacks, correct?
Yeah. It's because, again, you know, I'm working with Jeff on it. So there are certain times. Actually, let me give you a really good example. I don't know if you guys are that familiar with Bone, but there's a very famous page that Jeff did right around the Dragon Slayer book, which is, I believe, the fourth book. And it's the very end of that story when Thorn comes to basically rescue the dragon who is being sacrificed by the villagers and Phony Bone. And she jumps up on this rock, and it's her, basically, like, her legs are kind of spread across this rock, and she's backlit by a sunrise, and it's done in black and white. And he did these little dashes all around her, like in a huge circumference around her. And it looks like a sunrise behind her. And he did it in black and white. And again, I'll try to give you guys a link to I think I've got that on my site somewhere. But I'll show you what I had to do to that art to make it work in color, which it didn't actually work when I colorized it because those black dashes, which actually were representing light, didn't look good. They just looked like dirt or something because they suddenly I put I put like yellow and orange behind her, and those black little dashes did not look like, you know, sun rays anymore. They just looked like, I don't even know it. They didn't even look like dirt. They just looked like action lines or something.
Exactly.
You know, something like manga. So what I did was I just converted all of those lines I stroked those lines to be white instead of black. And suddenly it like completely fixed it.
Oh, yeah.
And Chris,
and I ran that past him definitely before I did it. I was like, listen, I don't know how to fix this. I think this is a good solution. And as soon as I showed him, he was on board with it. But, you know, again, it was that exact situation where it worked in black and white. As soon as we put color on it, it didn't work.
Uh-huh.
Chris, something else that you could do that a buddy of mine here in the studio with me tonight just suggested is if you were to knock out your line art like Ryan Estrada does, to where instead of it being pure black, it's a brown or a dark blue.
Right.
Then those dark black areas actually become a hue. And mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem as stark against the colors.
Oh, yeah, because I see what you're saying. Because so when the black is not used to represent a line anymore.
Yes.
Now it's pure shadow.
Right. Now it's just a shadow of color.
Right. Yeah.
So the black isn't as stark in a humified color strip, humificated strip.
Exactly.
Spectrumized. Steve, which work are you more proud of? Everything you've ever done or the cover for the PvP 10th anniversary special?
Dude, that cover was a dream come true, let me tell you, in so many ways.
Oh, yeah, speaking of which, you know how I asked you guys if we could turn a print into it? So,
So
I get an email from Image, and they're like, hey, we want you to approve this poster. And it's that cover. Yeah. And I went, what? You guys can't make a poster out of that without approving with me first. I don't want you selling that. We need to check with Jeff. And they go, oh, no, we're going to send it for free to comic book shops to promote the book.
Oh, no.
So you're there. How about that?
That's awesome, man.
It's all because of your coloring.
Great.
It's because of your coloring.
No, it's not. Actually, no. I will take a partial credit for that because, that was a lot of fun to color. And I got to do those crazy ice mountains down at the bottom, which was a lot of fun. So.
And it was very interesting for me because you kindly sent me the original art. And to compare the two is amazing to see how much you added. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
And you can really see in the choices that Jeff makes creatively and what he draws, you can see how much he trusts you to fill in the blanks. Like, there's a lot of trust there.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty good, you know, we have a pretty good working relationship now. It really is. It's not as – when I first started, I was definitely, you know, starstruck. It was, you know, because, I mean, I probably wasn't a fan of Bone from the beginning, but – you know, early enough that I was not even wanting to touch his original art, you know, without gloves on. So it's definitely been, you know, a lot easier going in the last couple of years, where he is definitely given me the, you know, the tip of the hat and the nod to let me do my thing. So it's awesome. I am blessed.
Hey, Steve, was there ever a moment that you thought, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? I mean, as far as working with Jeff Smith, was there a moment that you thought, I'm in over my head, or maybe I'm not meant to work with this guy? I mean, we've been doing a lot of talking about collaborations, and it would be neat to kind of hear you talk about this kind of a collaboration.
Yeah, I actually – I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just listening to that this morning, and you mentioned that. And I actually think the opposite. I think collaborations can be awesome. I think it's really hard, though. It really is, because you're still talking about two or three or four people that all have their own vision for whatever the art is going to become. So, you know, whatever the final product is going to become. And, I mean, you guys just wrote a book together, so you guys probably understand, you know.
Don't bring that up, please.
Just finally let go of that stuff.
That stuff is just healing.
Don't get back up.
Steve, our lawyers are still settling that out. Yeah. So Ixnay on the book A Talk.
Anyway, let's move on, shall we? Jeff Smith, awesome guy.
You can talk about it being on sale. You can talk about how awesome it's going to be, but do not discuss the process of making it.
How to make webcomics.
What was your low point, Steve? I'm just curious. And you don't have to go into detail, but what was a low point like for you?
I don't know. There wasn't really a major low point. It's usually just in the process of each book, there is that point when I finish my part, and then I know that Jeff and I are going to have to go over each page. I think about three or four chapters into that process, it becomes very difficult for me. And we just both get really, really into it. So I think it just and I've already, like I said before, I already put so much time and effort into each page. By the time I get to the final stage of, you know, him approving it and wanting to make changes to certain things, it's just hard, because I've looked at the same thing, you know, I've colored the same page, you know, several times by that point. So
here's the important thing, Steve. How do you get through that?
I've gotten to the point we don't have fights or anything, but I can jokingly tell Jeff to stuff it whenever I feel like it, and he lets me do that.
Acceptance as equals type of thing going on.
Yeah, yeah. And we both just make fun of each other relentlessly, and, you know, he basically just tells me to shut up and do it, and, you know, I tell him to shut up and let me do my thing, and we just honestly, it is like we are at that point, we are equals. We just want to make the thing, you know, good. And we know deep down that this is our last, you know, that at that point, it's our last chance to really get it right. So, you know, ultimately, I'm going to do it. I'm not a diva. He's not really a diva. We're not trying to, you know, outdo each other. We just, sometimes you just get tired. You know, you're just working on the same thing and you're creatively, you know, spent. You're just spent. And it's just hard to keep that energy up. So,
and you reach mental closure on this project at some point, and he has.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's coming into it very fresh. And for him, it's like, ooh, goody, I get to play. And for me, it's like, oh, no, you know. And, and you know, he doesn't really know Photoshop, and he doesn't really, you know, he's not very computer savvy. And so that on top of it sometimes is really grueling, because he wants to make changes, and I know how to make the changes. So when he's telling me one thing, I'm interpreting it as what I really have to do. You know what I mean? Like, can you change this character on this layer and that character on that layer? And all he's saying is, can you change Thorne's hat and can you change Grandma's shirt? But I'm freaking out, because I know that those characters are not on separate layers and blah, blah, blah. And it's just my mind is already, you know, fast forwarded to how much time I am going to have to put into it to change those two things. So
and whether you think that this is worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And most of, well, yeah, exactly.
Well, Steve,
sometimes we agree, but there
you,
are definitely times
you,
when I don't. So, yeah, that comes into play, and that's very fun.
Steve, let me ask you Brad's collaboration question from a different angle, because I think this would be interesting to hear. Is now that you've worked on your own and worked in collaboration, if money were the same, if the paychecks were the same, which do you think you would want to do for the majority of your creative life if going forward?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I'm pretty happy with where I'm at right now. So I would probably – as long as, you know, as long as Jeff wants me, I'll probably stick around and work with him. So, I mean, working on my own stuff is fun, but yeah, I don't know. We make some really, really good comics. So I think I would probably just stick around for as long as, you know, again, as long as he wants me around, I think I'll stick around.
Good.
Steve, what is Jeff Smith like?
He is a bastard.
I feel bad. We've been
He's awesome, man. Let me tell you what he's like. I consider him a friend, and I'm not trying to sound, you know, cliche or weird or dumb about that. He's very much down to earth. He's not the guy that, you know, I mean, the five of us, we know him as a certain thing because of his career and because of what he's done. But you know, he's really just a guy who, you know, he just makes comic, and he's just a normal guy, and working with him is pretty laid back. There are very few actual stressful days. Most of the stress comes from stuff that is good stress, which, like I just said, you know, just trying to make good art, which I'll take that any day. So it's a good.
Do you share a studio with him, or do you? What's the relationship like geographically?
Yeah, actually, we both live in the same. I just bought a house down in German Village, which is the neighborhood of Columbus that the studio and that his
with
house
with that three story bookstore down there.
Yeah, actually, I'm three blocks away from that. Actually,
you're
yes.
kidding me.
it's just
I'm
down
very
the street.
Familiar with that area.
Yep, the Book Loft. It's a very cool place.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a small world.
You guys are geographically close. Then you can you see him on a regular basis.
Yeah, every day. Yeah, he's got a studio like above. His house is pretty sweet, and it's got a one bedroom apartment above his garage, and they converted that into his personal studio. So he's got like a studio, and then he has the office, which is our, you know, Cartoon Books has an office building, which I've got an office in that. In that building. And then he, of course, has an office upstairs of that building too. But it's just four of us. It's him and his wife who run the business, and then me and Kathleen. And Kathleen's the manager, production manager. She does basically everything that nobody else can. So it's just a little family, man. We're like I say, man, I got stress. I got no complaints.
Huh. And so, do you feel that geographical proximity is a bonus, or do you think you could have done it over the web just as easily?
No, I think working together probably with certain people, it's probably easier to work over the web. But I think for Jeff, he's a lot more. I think he needs to be there and be able to see it, you know, see it right up close to be able to, you know, to approve everything. At this point, if something were to happen and I needed to, you know, move, I think we could probably make it work over the web. But I think our location is key. You know, working together is key.
Yeah.
So let's.
I was just gonna ask a Shazam question. Can I ask a
Sure.
question? Because I think this is different from Bone, because it's just you and Jeff making color choices. But when you were essentially bringing back a character that, for all intents and purposes, hasn't really been used much, I don't think, if at all. Did you? How many layers of approval did you have to go through for the final suit colors? I mean, obviously you weren't going to go with green and blue, but did you have to go through anything and say, like, we're going with this tint of red, this tint of yellow, this tint of gold?
No, no. In fact, they didn't. There was no artistic approval process at all. They didn't ever. We actually wrote that into the contract before we started. That basically we were just going to deliver the pages, finished pages. They had no. They had some approvals over the writing, so the script got. You know, and there we had an editor. Mike Carlin was our editor, and he's an awesome guy. And yeah, by the way, everybody at DC that we worked with, they were awesome. So working with them was great. It was very, very cool. But yeah, they never came back and said, "Hello, You know, you didn't color the right. the lightning bolt the right color. In fact, I think I got one of the first years that we did. I think we did a teaser poster for one of the San Diegos, like maybe 2003, like years before he even started it. I did just, you know, he did a piece of art and I colored it. And one of the people at DC who I had previously already known, she actually told me that I got the color right. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. You know, I was like, I wasn't really trying. I thought it was pretty straightforward. But she told me, she was like, no, you don't understand. It's Shazam has a specific red. It's not Superman has a specific red and Shazam has a specific red and they're not the same. And I found out later that it's actually true. If you looked on the color wheel, the Superman red that they normally use is closer to purple, and Shazam's red is closer to orange. It's like on the opposite. It's kind of, you know, if you were to open Photoshop and look at the little color slider, it would be the red that's closer to the bottom. So, yeah, right. I didn't really think about that, but apparently I got lucky and, you know, it got past approvals that way. So. I mean, I did it on purpose.
Well, now, I cut Scott off there. So, Scott, I'm sorry about that. What was the thought you were going to go with?
Oh, I was just going to say we should maybe talk some tips and tricks about color. And I have a funny story, actually, about color theory. And
oh boy, another one of Kurtz's color theory stories.
This old saw.
Yikes.
Dozens every week.
Anyway, I killed the man one time, and what happened was we were talking color theory, and
I said, I'll make you bleed red.
So
it'll be closer to purple.
My funny story is, and I is about color theory is that I was having to color comics to be published for the covers of the PvP comic when I first started self publishing. And I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how to choose colors. And so I was coloring all these covers and turning them in. And pretty soon I got a call from John Kovalik, who was my publishing partner at the time. And he said, Scott, I have to tell you, I am really – you were nervous about doing those covers. But I got to tell you, your coloring is beautiful. Could you send me your palette? And I went, my God, what does that mean? I don't understand. He's like, well, you know, the palette you're using, could just send me a copy of it. And I'm like, John, walk me through that. I don't understand. How do I do that in Photoshop? And he's like, well, the palette that you load up when you color, the palette you made. I go, didn't make a palette. Well, what colors are you using? And I said, you know, on Photoshop, if you hit swatches, they have all those colors. And he goes, no, Scott, don't use those colors. You can't use those colors. And I said, why not? And he goes, because they won't print right. And I go, well, they seem to be printing fine. You're asking for them.
You were pretty hot on them for a couple of emails.
Yeah. And so ever since then, people have been trying to talk me out of using that stupid default Photoshop palette. And one guy was even like – one really good tip I got for picking – because my problem is I don't know what colors to pick. I've got to color something. I've got to fill in colors. What do I choose? What color do I make shirts, you know, et cetera. And one of the best hints I got was someone said to take your digital camera and go to the mall and go to like a Macy's or a Nordstrom or anything with a lot of female fashion in it. And just go around and start taking pictures of outfits because those fashion designers have really awesome color sense and they put together palettes of colors for the outfits. And just look around and see what colors and outfits are pleasing to you and take pictures. And then you've got those color combinations and you can just bring them home. And, you know, make palettes out of them.
Wow. Did you ever actually do that, Scott?
No. Are you kidding me? What are you talking about?
I'm just trying to make a mental image over here.
You think a 6'4", 400-pound guy walking through a Nordstrom with a digital camera sweating and taking pictures of outfits. That's going to go over like a fart in church.
That's not going to arouse suspicion. Oh, this color scheme is fantastic. Oh. Oh, I must capture it on film.
Hey, you know what? I want to hear some of Steve's tips and tricks, but I'll throw this out as for my meager one, and it's Bush League. I'm going to be the first to admit. There's a site called colorschemer.com, and you can put a color in, and it generates a whole palette for you based on colors that kind of go well with that color. I use it for courting disaster all the time, and it really kind of helps me focus a little bit because I'm really bad at that. It does not come natural for me. So if you check out colorschemer.com, I think then put a /online.html.
I just went straight there and it worked.
Yeah. But it don't work?
No, it does work.
Yeah, it does work. It's just with the address.
Yeah. Check that out. It really helps me focus a little bit for courting disaster.
There's another thing online, Brad, that my buddy Joel here just showed me. It's if you look up color palette generator, it's at jrm.cc. You can upload any photo, and it will take and generate a color palette based on the photo.
Wow. Oh, neat.
That's very cool.
I'm learning. Now, Brad, this color schemer, is this all RGB or is this CYMK?
I'm learning.
Well, you know what I do? You can actually type in a hex decimal or you can type it in RGB. And then to be honest with you, I put the number in RGB, but I work in CMYK, so there's a little bit of a discrepancy there, but it's close enough because it's going to be printed in the newspaper in the end, so it's going to be CMYK sooner or later.
Right. All right, yeah, so let's get to Steve's tips. I want to hear what Steve's got on.
Oh wow, let's do some tips. I actually have a tip that Scott, you actually said this a couple of weeks ago. I think you were talking about Ugly Hill, which I've just recently been reading. And that guy, man, he can color very well, very well. And one of the tips that you were talking about, Scott, was actually after you've done color, after you've finished your entire piece of color, putting a layer above everything and tinting it.
Yeah.
And actually just filling it with some solid color. It could be anything. It could be yellow or purple or red or anything. Usually the more vibrant the color, the better. And then set that layer to like 20%.
And you do that
and
for
that changes. Normal? What's that?
Do you set that palette on normal or do you go multiply or darken?
That's just normal. What's your palette? I usually just set that at normal and just set the opacity itself to like 20% so it's like see-through. And it usually you can – what I do is I'll just set a selection so it's only going to affect the – within the images within the panel so that you don't get that – you don't get the purple haze over the white borders around it or around the artwork. But yeah, that technique alone has defined a lot of what Jeff and I do with Bone, where we will actually just color a scene almost in daytime colors, just straight up, even if it's clearly at night or if it's in a cave or whatever. And we'll just put a dark purple layer above everything and then set it at 20% and then just start erasing. And when you're erasing from that layer, you're actually you're starting to show through the more vibrant color underneath, and it looks like light is hitting the different things in each panel. So, like if I'm coloring Thorn's face, I can set that layer, to 20% and start like erasing around her nose, and her nose will suddenly get more light, and it'll start coming forward, and you can put a little haze of you can use the eraser and like kind of get a little airbrush haze around her cheeks and pull those forward. So that technique has really really helped us in setting mood, especially like we're able to do some really fun stuff that way. So that is a tip that I am basically stealing from Scott Kurtz.
And I stole it from the Penny Arcade guys.
I was going to say, isn't that what Mike does?
Yeah. And if you talk to him, he can tell you who he stole it from.
Yeah. I don't know where, I don't feel like I stole it from anybody. I honestly think I mean, I'm sure people have done it before me, but I just, we just experimented and came up with that because, you get to a point where you've colored the same, getting back to palette, I use the same palette pretty much for everything. And then we just kind of alter it slightly depending on what the scene is. So obviously, if it's like a cloudy day, you know, I'm using more subdued colors. And what I normally do, this is, I guess, a pro tip, but I have a color palette that I set up at the very beginning of when I started coloring bone. And I just kind of gave a generic, like, this is going to be the flesh tones for the humans. This is the basic, you know, cream white that I'm going to use for the bones. This is the, you know, this is Smiley's vest red. You know, he has a specific red color, things like that. And I would just go through every single character and basically just chop out all of their color breaks and set those colors. So I have a file that just looks like – it looks like a mishmash at, you know, by this point, because I've added to it and it just kind of – it's real messy now. But it just – it actually looks like a painting palette, and you can just cut that and keep your colors consistent that way. And it comes in handy when, you know, the characters are always in the same light or things like that. But we've gotten to the point in the books now where the scenes are changing so drastically that we can't really – you know, we can't really keep using the same daytime colors. We have to make, you know, alterations to make those colors, you know, moody and again, actually sort of tell the story. You don't want the characters just running around like a, I wouldn't even really say Disney film, but, you know, like a Disney movie or a cartoon where the characters are always the same, like Simpsons or something, where the characters always have the exact same colors.
Right.
You know, actually Disney is more of an inspiration because Disney does do what I'm talking about. They actually do, you know, take the colors and pitch them, you know, they'll drain all the chroma out of the colors in certain scenes. And, you know, they do a lot of those same techniques, in their movies. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
So. You know, it's really funny. When I was doing advertising art type stuff before I got to quit all of that and be a cartoonist, I would run into people in the professional art biz, especially the people that I met on jobs like you have, Chris, kind of temporary art jobs, contract art jobs.
Yeah.
And you would see something they were doing, and you'd go over and say, "Wow, that's really awesome. How did you do that?" And their response was, "I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you." You know,
really?
Like, yeah. Oh, yes.
Really?
Yes.
My God.
I have not run into that.
And maybe it's changed, but back then it was like, no, I will not tell you. And I actually, it happened within the last 2 years at a comic book convention with a comic book artist. They had put some neat shading effect on. I said, "How did you do that?" And he was like, "I don't feel comfortable telling you." And I, for the longest time, I have tried to mentally work through why it made sense to keep that a secret, and I, for the life of me, can't do it.
Hey, Scott, I don't want to – I want to jump in here for just a second. We've lost Dave Kellett. Do you want to call him back?
Oh no. Thanks for telling me.
I don't see him.
No worries.
I don't see him online to call him. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, in the meantime, I have a pro tip for color. Don't use it. Just avoid it entirely.
It's crap.
We've gone on for like an hour talking about colors and what to do with them and how many you got to work on. I'm not thinking about that.
Doesn't this seem like a lot of work? Wouldn't it be easier just to avoid it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it's cheaper. It's cheaper, especially for self-publishing. It's definitely cheaper.
Yeah, I'm trying to – I mean, I'm using black and white. I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of the black.
Just wait.
So that
white
there's just
white.
No work. Yeah. Yep. Easy.
You'll get there, dude. You'll get there.
Well, I've rang Dave a couple times, and he's not responding. Maybe
I saw him come back, and then,
I know that.
He's really offended.
Maybe apparently. It's time to wrap this up.
Sounds like a plan.
Well, you know, before we do, I would just be – do you have any other – yeah, and he's not in the chat either. Do you have any other pro tips? Because that one was really good that you had there, Steve, and I really appreciate having you on today.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate being on it. You guys are an inspiration to me too, just doing my own thing. So, it's cool to just, you know, like Scott was just saying, you know, sharing knowledge and sharing these little, you know, tips and tricks and just kind of being accessible for people, you know, with the secrets, the quote unquote secrets of how to do it is, you know, is very interesting to me. When I was in college and in high school, certainly, I would have killed for something like this, you know, people like you guys who are just, you know, ready to give information to people. And so it's fun to be able to just, you know, tell people. I mean, my biggest pro tip is just just try stuff. You know, if you know enough in Photoshop and you don't think you can do it, just try. I mean, I didn't know how to do this before I just started messing around with it.
Hey, I just thought I failed
a lot before. Yeah,
I just thought of something, Scott. Whenever you'd approach one of those guys and you're like, how did you do that? And they're like, no, I don't feel comfortable telling you. Maybe they weren't comfortable telling you because that's all they've got.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
And if you knew it, then and with your greater level of talent, then what are they going to do? So they're just going to hold on to that.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's an old school sense for certain artists of being very threatened about, you know, the fact that people could take your job away from you. So, I don't think I'm going to lose my job, you know, specifically. But, you know, I guess if you worked in, you know, maybe for a bigger company, maybe like a DC or a Marvel, and there were people, you know, beneath you ready to learn your secrets and take your job, I guess you could lose your job, but I don't see it.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I think we're beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Webcomics Weekly.
It's not Webcomics Weekly. It's not Webcomics Weekly without that dead air.
Yeah.
Without knowing it's time to end it.
Exactly.
Well, listen,
that would be awesome. Let's institute a little program that if it hears more than 3 seconds of dead air, then it just stops recording. And
the music begins.
Let it choose for us. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on a second. Dismissed.
Yes.
Dave is just now messaging me. Oh, no, I got knocked off. Yeah, it's been like 10 minutes, dude. Let's see if I can get him back in. Was he napping?
We were just being quiet. We were just having quiet.
Were you napping?
Sorry about that. Woo.
We need your pro tips. Go.
We missed some pretty good pro tips. You're going to have to listen. Yeah.
I can't wait to listen to the podcast.
What the hell have you been for the last 10 minutes?
I apologize. I'm sorry. I have a contractor here, and because I can do a little bit of electrical, but I don't know how to do three-way lights. Do you guys know what that means in electrical talk?
Yeah.
I cannot – I don't know how to run the lines for that. I always am afraid I'm going to blow my whole system. I don't know how to do it, so I had a guy coming out to do it. Anyway, I apologize because I had to
talk to him. And that's a lot like webcomics.
And that's a lot like webcomics. Don't know what I'm doing. I get nervous. I start to sweat. I break the entire system.
We're just wrapping up. We already had our moment of silence where everybody went quiet at the same time.
Everybody, we were thinking about what we all said.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, it was like contented sighing is what that
sure.
is. Like
I'm great and you're great. You guys are so talented and we're all so awesome.
We're great. Yeah.
So Steve, can I ask you a question from SPX when I first got to meet you?
Sure.
Because I made a statement a couple weeks back, and now I'm not sure if it was you. Was it you that when we were up at the bar and when Steve – it was you, Chris, and I think. Was it you that said, what is that laugh in regard to Brad? Or was that something else?
Poor Brad.
Well-cued laugh, Brad. I'm pretty sure. I actually emailed Brad right after that podcast was listened to by myself because I do not remember that. I don't remember that. It could have been me, but I am normally not. I am normally not that. The way you told that story sounded a little mean spirited.
Yes, this is why I wanted to clarify because you would not have said it. You assuredly would not have said it mean spiritedly. But I wanted to make sure that it was.
Pretty sure it wasn't me, but it could have. I guess it could have.
It was not Steve. It wasn't him. It was a lot of people, but it wasn't Steve.
Tender, the old lady was smoking cigarettes down at the corner.
Right, somebody outside the convention. Exactly.
There was a cop that came in from the street. Like, I heard there was a disturbance in here.
Who's laughing in here?
I hear there's a disturbance now, lad.
Well,
no, actually,
what the hell was that? Was that your attempt at an old Irish cop?
That was my best attempt at an Irish cop.
Oh, what seems to be the disturbance?
What is an Irish accent unless I say potato first, and then it kind of like tunes
yeah.
my ear.
You need to get your mantra. Yeah.
Yeah. Dino, the guy that does voice of Skull, always has a little key phrase he says for Skull. And for me, the Irish accent is I have to say, tell me about the potatoes, father. Father, potatoes, father's lucky charms.
My key, my key line on that voice is always like, what seems to be the problem here?
So he's hiding in the stove, eh? You might, rabbit, you might.
Oh, you might,
if he was hiding in the stove, would I turn the gas on? You might, rabbit, you might.
Oh, you might, rabbit, you might. All right.
Okay, Rocky, he's not in here.
Well, me and Officer Stereotype will be leaving now. Me and Mickey Flynn here.
Web Comics Weekly with all the racism.
Exactly. Guess throw that in.
I'm glad. All right. Well, we've served and protected. Blarney Stone Shillelagh. Gonna go drink.
All right. Glug, glug, glug. Okay, I'm off.
He's been holding it in all day. It was really rough. Well, you know, that I was Irish today.
You know what, Steve? I'm gonna be the first to say it. Then it was an honor and a pleasure to have you on Web Comics Weekly, I think I've got most value out of those last 10 minutes. I think personally.
Well, I'm glad I could clear my name, you know, for Brad because I
have. Yeah, you know what? You
have
are
the utmost
owed
respect. Yeah.
You are owed a formal and public apology from me for besmirching the great name of Hammaker, and I apologize.
Thank you very much.
You know, we launch a wide-scale investigation, and then in a week I get on the podcast. I'm like, all right, we have interviewed people, and we have determined who it was that said that. It was Brad's wife.
Or even worse, I don't even learn my lesson, and I'm like, next week on the podcast, I'm like, so I'm talking with Steve at San Diego Comic-Con. He tells me he's killed a man.
No.
Steve immediately emailing, wait, no, I didn't. I never said.
The only problem is every Steve story has to be something negative towards Brad.
Yes.
I killed a man because he looked like Brad.
Yeah.
Well, Web Comics Weekly, Steve, do you have a website besides boneville.com?
I have steve-ham, and that's just my site. It doesn't really have much on it. It's got a link to my blog. I just got a Blogger blog that
so
I update
frequently. Steve-hamaker.com.
.com, yeah.
That's H-A-M-A-K-E-R.
That's it.
Right.
The English language is your friend. Use it wisely.
Tonight, the aspect of the broadcast brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi.
Good Lord.
You know what my favorite subtext there is? Every time that you you quote what wine you're drinking on the podcast, it's always like the $4 Costco one.
Well, Dave, what are you drinking?
Night Train.
I've got $2 Chuck. I'm no better. Let me tell you.
$2 Chuck?
Give me Mr. Shaw.
Golly. Gentlemen. Gentlemen.
Oh, yes. Up.
This has been Web Comics Weekly. I've been your host, Scott Kurtz. You've been listening to Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com.
Hey-o.
You've been listening to Brad Geiger, a.k.a. The Wigwam. Evil-comic.com.
Heyo.
You've been listening to Chris Straub, starslip.com.
You were listening to me.
And a special guest, Steve Hammaker at steve-hammaker.com or boneville.com.
If it's not color, it's crap.
And
hey,
with me in studio is Joel.
Nicely done, Steve.
Hijinksinsue.com. My buddy Joel's hanging out with me, had some sushi with me tonight.
Very good.
Also, my sister-in-law, Ashley, who listened in, played Warcraft the whole time. No website.
and a special thanks to Tim's Lighting for doing my three-way light switch tonight. That's very nice of you.
And now we will end the show with a moment of awkward silence.
Ready?